Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Mm-hmm. And this is the Moral Dilemma edition. Is there a saint for moral dilemmas? Because there ought to be.
Maybe they're all saints for moral dilemmas. It depends on which one.
That's right. This is episode 126. And we're going to talk about the Ben Affleck directed Gone Baby Gone.
Yes.
Yeah.
This was his directorial debut, I believe, and starred his brother Casey Affleck. And what a movie.
Yes. It was horrible, but it was good. But it was
very
horrible.
Tough. Very tough.
Yeah, it was man, does it stay with you. I mean, I've been thinking about this ever since I saw it. And you just constantly think about it. You're just, it's one of those moral dilemmas that it's just an impossible, how can you possibly know what the right thing to do is without knowing the future? You know what I mean?
Right.
I can see both sides of the argument, and to think about what I would do in this situation is one of the gifts of this movie.
Every review I've read practically talks about that. Mm. And I actually, you know, without having rewatched it, I watched it once and it really stuck with me. And then, you know, I do this movie discussion group with this assisted living place, and I chose the movie and I was watching it the night before I was going to drop it off, and everybody was all prepped for it. And I'm thinking, oh, the violence. Oh, the language. Oh, no. And my husband's going, are they grown-ups or are they not? And I thought, well, okay. And the interesting thing was, except for one lady who's like, if they say one more F word, I'm leaving. And then she did leave. She wheeled herself right out of there. But nobody complained about the violence. And nobody was thrilled about the language. But what everybody was outraged over was the final decision of the movie. I was the only one defending it, and I was only able to do that because I'd seen the movie twice, and I had hooked onto what I thought was kind of the key to thinking about it, which was the opening voiceover. Hmm. You see this inner Boston, inner city area.
Yeah. Interesting. So you were the only one defending the decision of the
Patrick's
main character?
Patrick's choice at the end.
Okay. Interesting.
And in fact, that movie still generates conversation, and it's been a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
So as the person who helps me said, she goes, yeah, it was a tough movie to watch. She goes, but think about it. We were still talking about it after you left. It comes up every so often, and everyone starts talking about it again. So it's a really deep movie. And all the roughness, the violence, the language, I think they're necessary because they show you the environment that all this happens in. You know, when you have a lack of moral grounding, what's left? This is what creeps in and fills it in.
Wow. Yes, indeed. Yeah.
So I guess for a brief summary.
Yeah, let's talk about it. First, this is from a novel written by Dennis Lehane. Mm-hmm. Have you read any of his books?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So apparently this is the fourth story that has Patrick and Angie in it of the novels.
Roger Ebert.
It makes me really want to read them. I've never read anything by Dennis Lehane, but I always thought he was a police procedural writer.
Mm-hmm.
Is that... if you haven't read them, I guess you know as much as me.
I don't know. I know that Mystic River, which Clint Eastwood directed, was also from a book by him. I think about this couple. And one of the things Roger Ebert's review said was, even though there were four novels, Ben Affleck and the screenwriter, chose to show this as with them being new and somewhat unsure rather than a seasoned detective couple.
Gotcha.
And he's like, I think that was the right choice. And not knowing anything else, if you just take the movie for what it is, it was absolutely the right choice because it shows them trying to find their way.
Mm-hmm.
in a very difficult case. And so the case is, shall I describe
it? Yeah, go right ahead. I was just looking it up. There's six novels now, it looks like.
Okay.
But yeah, I liked these characters quite a bit, so I may give one a try.
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear how you like it.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to read one.
Maybe so. Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, so basically there's a missing child case in, I would call it an inner city area in Boston, very poor. And you see, it's interesting, there are a lot of scenes throughout this movie of just the environment. And so it's run down, but you see regular people doing things, talking on their stoops, little girls walking around together, you know, all this kind of thing. And scattered throughout there are all kinds of religious images, because these are the images that are around people all the time. And so they're kind of overlooked, you get the point, too. Mm-hmm. But they're also embedded in their lives. And so anyway, what happens
is... Hold on, what do you mean by religious images?
As they're panning through neighborhoods, you'll see a statue of Mary.
Okay.
You'll see a cross around, you know, a car rearview mirror. You'll see all kinds of like little religious statues like you'd imagine in Italian neighborhoods. They're just like sitting around on people's TVs or in a bar, or especially if you rewatch that opening montage and any kind of montage he has, there's always some kind of religious symbol, at least one. And you feel like they're just really, truly part of the neighborhood. But they're clearly left in. They're not taken out.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I remember you said once, if there's a cross on the wall, it's on purpose. The director's not going to allow that to be there unless there's, you know, they wanted it there. Right.
And it was the second time through that I was watching it when I suddenly, you know, because the first time you watch this movie, there are so many shocking things in it that you're kind of reacting and just trying to keep up with the story, which is fairly complex. And the second time, of course, you know the story. You can let some of that part go, and you're ready for the violence. Mm. And so you can kind of take more in.
Yeah.
And you know, so just to skip ahead, but you know, the drug guy who comes, who finds some of the people that Patrick's been looking for and comes to find him, which shows an unexpected good side to his nature, he's wearing a cross around his neck.
That's right, yeah.
I hadn't noticed that until this third time through.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that kind of thing, you know. However casually people take their religion, these symbols are everywhere. So do we ignore them, or do they have some effect on us or remind us of anything, which I veered far from the story. So a four-year-old girl is missing, and the police can't find her. It's been 3 days, and everybody knows you should be able to, if you don't find a child in a day, you know, the odds of finding them alive go rapidly down. There's a special unit looking for them, headed up by Morgan Freeman, whose 12-year-old daughter many years ago was killed in a similar sort of situation. So he's got a personal interest in making sure this kid gets found and brought home. The person who is driving it, driving the search, and is not only the mother, but the aunt and uncle of this child. And they live in the same building as the mother. And she is not satisfied with what the police are doing, because she knows that if it was somebody local, they won't talk to the police. So she looks for a detective. And what she finds is Patrick Kinsey and Angie, I can't remember her last name, but anyway.
Gennaro. Right.
So they're, you know, they're a live together couple, but they have done missing persons work, but it's always been people who've deliberately dropped off the grid, not something like this. Angie doesn't want to do it because she doesn't want to find a body in a dumpster. She doesn't want to find a molested child. And as Patrick says, nobody does. So she can't resist the aunt's appeal. And so they agree to look. And what that does is take you into the very seamy underbelly of this neighborhood, because they both grew up there. They went to high school with a lot of these people who are very shady now. And because of that relationship, they can talk to people and at least get a little fingernail in a place where they might be able to look. And as, excuse me, as it unfolds, you find out that it gets twistier and harder to keep track of and harder to understand. They wind up working with a couple of cops who are assigned to the case, who are older, experienced cops, played by, one of them is played magnificently by Ed Harris. And I The other is a character actor you've seen a lot, and I don't remember
his name. Yeah, I think his name is John Ashton.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they're kind of the world-weary, experienced guys who they definitely want to find the kid, but they also know how these things usually go.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of provide the aging balance of wisdom, so to speak, that the young detectives kind of ignore in their search. And I don't know how much else to say. What do you think?
Yeah, you better not say anything more than that without giving stuff away. So
I guess, yeah. And I guess the thing that about it, despite what we've said about the violence and the language and all this, and the fact that it's a subject that nobody wants to think about, which is the missing, innocent, sweet little child, is that throughout this, there is an unexpected, strong moral strain, because Patrick is always, not obviously, and sometimes it's just with a throwaway line or an attitude, but he's always trying to figure out what's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And the whole movie winds up being a reflection of choices that you make and how we can't always predict our choices, outcomes, and how those choices change you, and do the ends justify the means? I think I could say that without...
Yeah. Yeah, and then another theme I would say is that of responsibility.
Yeah.
Responsibilities dropped and responsibilities... carried out.
Well, and free will.
And free will, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising that this is in here. So I was going to read the beginning voiceover. Mm-hmm. Do you mind?
Oh, please do. Yeah.
Excuse me. So Patrick says, "I always believed it was the things you don't choose that makes you who you are. Your city, your neighborhood, your family. People here take pride in these things like it was something they'd accomplished. The bodies around their souls, the city wrapped around those. I lived on this block my whole life. Most of these people have. When your job is to find people who are missing, it helps to know where they started. I find the people who started in the cracks and then fell through. This city can be hard. When I was young, I asked my priest how you could get to heaven and still protect yourself from all the evil in the world. He told me what God said to his children. You are sheep among wolves. Be wise as serpents, yet innocent as doves." Hmm. And to me, that's how you sum up, what's this movie about? How can you get to heaven and still protect yourself from all the evil in the world? That's really what he has stated there. He's trying to live by what his priest said. And it's not really obvious in the movie. You know,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. On the surface anyway.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's cool to hear that after having seen the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fascinating. I like it. But right, so yeah, we can't really, you know, it is gritty, you know, like you said, there's language and things. I really loved, and I saw an interview after this. Affleck, you know, Ben Affleck was very much after a feel in this movie. It was important to him to get the neighborhood right. He really wanted to portray the neighborhood as he knew it, and he did know it, you know, because he grew up there, right? So I thought that was an interesting aspect, and they were talking a little bit about how they would go to a location and see who was there and maybe try to get him to stay and maybe film a little bit. You know, sometimes they would have, he said, you know, it wasn't completely random. You know, they did place people here and there, but sometimes they would put them all there and say, okay, you guys are all there. And then they'd wait until they were bored. And then he wouldn't say action. He would just start filming. You know, his brother and, what's her name? Michelle
Monahan.
Yeah, they would walk through the scene, and people wouldn't really know that they were being filmed. So it's like, you know, when you have a camera on you and you wait until you forget about it.
Right. That is so great.
But it was really important to him to get the feel of the environment. So I think that's important to mention.
Yeah, and you really feel it. It is that thing of, these people began in the cracks. They didn't just fall through the cracks. They started off down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was really struck by that. Also, It's so authentic that the accents, a lot of times, you feel like you need the captions on because it's really Boston.
That's right.
Low-class Boston. You know, and sometimes they'd say things, and I'm just like, what? You were mumbling and using that accent.
Yeah. And Casey Affleck, who is the younger brother of Ben, he's an interesting actor. It's like he's got this really young face, right? but yet he was believable to me as a very tough guy. He did some things that were surprising in the movie that I was like, wow, they were just surprising in the potential violence, right? Yeah. But you know, that set up, you know, that was just a piece of his character that was important. But the I found him really interesting. It was like throughout the movie, I just kept watching him. You know, it was like, what an interesting person.
Yeah, he did a lot with a little. I mean, sometimes just a look or a feel.
Yeah, I thought he was very, very good.
Yeah, he was really great. I remember when this came out, Ben Affleck has not had, you know, the best luck in when he's in movies. And, you know, sometimes they're good. Like Argo was great. And he was
Argo
that.
Was terrific.
And he
directed that one, didn't he?
He directed that also, but it was after this. And so, but he'd had some movies where everybody in the reviews went, okay, we're going to forget Jiggly or whatever it was.
there's a movie but, I have not seen.
And they
seen.
Went, oh, clearly we've had the brothers in the wrong spots. We need to watch Casey and let Ben direct.
Oh, how about that?
But I have to say, the third time through, I was watching this and having been desensitized and kind of knowing where things come, when I want to look away, I was just fascinated by how much I love this movie. Because, you know, again, I've gotten past the visceral stuff to where I can look at what are they really talking about.
Yeah.
So I guess we should start.
Well, that's great. Yes, I'm excited to hear some of that. So, okay. So if you want to watch this movie without having any spoilers, do so now and come back.
Yes.
Yeah, because there are some here. So highly recommend that you watch it and then come back.
Yeah, definitely.
So, all right. Okay. So, yeah. Yeah, so the Casey Affleck character, he did have that moral thing like you were talking about, but every now and then it's not like it was against character because it was a survival in the environment. But he could be very hard. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it felt almost against his look. You know what I mean? That's what I found so fascinating. It was just about him specifically was that. And then Gennaro, Angie, I really liked her as well. But at the beginning, when she was reluctant to take the case in the first place, that was really prescient. She was really, maybe that was foreshadowing what was to come.
Well, I think it's the way everybody, it's just reflecting how we all feel when we see some case like that on the news. Your heart is breaking for the people. And so you don't want to think about it.
Yeah.
You know, that's too much pain. And she was going to be personally involved if they took the case. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is that his instinct was, well, we should at least look into it. I don't want to, but I'm being asked. Maybe I can help. I mean, and the funny thing is that we're talking about this, and some of it is said, but a lot of it isn't said. A lot of it is, this is so smartly written, they'll say things that make you fill in the blanks yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I felt, you know, they credited your intelligence, which was kind of a problem sometimes when they were unraveling the mystery, and I was like, wait, hold on, I can't remember who this person is that they're saying this happened and that happened and this happened. Mm-hmm. So every time they replayed the thing near the quarry, I was like, oh, thank you for showing me that because I can't remember who everyone is right now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
As more was discovered about it. Well, and the thing about, Patrick's character, when I realized that he was really struggling to be wise as a serpent but innocent as a dove and do the right thing was after he kills the child molester,
mm-hmm.
who's killed the little boy, and you don't really think about it. I went, that was a moment of revulsion that he just, this is how he reacted. But later, Angie comes up to him and says, I'm proud of you. You did the right thing. He's like, I did the right thing. And she goes, yeah, he killed a child. He deserved to die. And he's like, huh. And then later outside, he's talking to Remy Broussard.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, he says, murder is a sin.
Yeah.
And Broussard says, it depends who you do it to. And he says, that's not how it works. It is what it is. And I remember the first time I saw the movie, I was like, what? That was such a foreign concept in a movie like this. Justice is done. That's it. And instead, this guy is feeling regret because he, right before that, he talks about, my priest said, God is, shame is from God to tell you what you did wrong or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's thinking it through. He's going, this is why I feel ashamed that I did this. And was it Angie or no, I guess it's Broussard. He says, would you do it again? And he goes, no. And he goes, well, I would. And then he tells about how he framed somebody to get a little boy out of a bad situation.
Right.
And you stop and think about it and you're going, here's the whole free will. What other steps could you have taken? Do the ends justify the means?
Yeah, which is, brutally difficult.
Yeah, but these are the situations that, you know, it's nice when you have a story and it's all set out for you in black and white. It's very easy to choose. And this movie never does that. It pays you the compliment of making you think about it.
Yeah, and it does. And it Patrick is really quite alone. That was something that struck me. When that conversation with Remy was very powerful outside the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick has shot that child molester in a house raid. And Remy's partner got shot. So they're at the hospital. Right. And that's the moment at which I really felt, you know, how alone Patrick was when he was talking to Remy, and Remy is saying things that, you know, you reasonably make sense, you know, because he's like, well, my goal is good and therefore what mm-hmm. I need to do to achieve that is going to be fine. And that's what you just did and you should be fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
But Patrick is like having none of that. And right. then when I think it was right before that, it was the moment that you described when Angie came up to him mm-hmm. and said she was so proud of him.
It is.
And he was, you know, even her, you know, it was like nobody understood his point of view from then on.
Right.
Which was interesting.
Kind of crystallized everything for him, I think.
Because I think so too, yeah.
Yeah, you feel like he hadn't killed anyone before. And you know he did it in that moment of revulsion and hatred for what had happened to that poor little boy. And he wasn't thinking. He was reacting.
Mm-hmm.
And you watching, we're used to this is how justice works. We're glad to see that guy die. Mm-hmm. This isn't the first kid he's done this to.
Yeah. Yeah, when I watch it, you know, I've seen it once. And when he shot that guy, I thought, oh, boy, he's going to go to jail.
Oh.
Because of how he shot him, you know, and I was thinking, right. you know, how many movies have we seen where, you know, he wasn't being shot, you know, coming towards him or anything like that. So it was mm-hmm. like a slam dunk case. That's what ran through my head is Got that it. He was going to prison.
Yeah.
But instead, he felt like he needed to go to prison and no one was trying to send him to prison. In fact, you know, other police officers were like, good job. Well done.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you know, the partner's funeral. Good
yeah,
one on this guy.
We don't need to have him in the court system because we don't want to lose that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in fact, when it might have been when Remy was talking about how he'd framed the guy, the father of the little boy,
mm-hmm.
and Casey Patrick says, well, you know, social services, child protection or whatever, and he gets, mm-hmm. no, I'm going to make sure this is done right because they won't do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's somehow that's just briefly, you know, tossed away.
Right.
And so, which kind of, now that I think about it, reflects on the end of the movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because he becomes the child social services.
Yeah, a little bit. In a way. Right. Yeah, I just found the quote from Remy Broussard. Mm. Is that what you say?
Broussard.
Okay. So, yeah, he's talking to Patrick. And his whole philosophy is, Broussard's philosophy is, you got to take a side. You molest a child, you beat a child, you're not on my side. If you see me coming, you better run because I'm going to lay you the F down. Easy. And then Patrick says, don't feel easy. And then the detective says, is the kid better off without his father? Yeah, but okay. I mean, I could be out there right now. He could be out there right now pumping with a gun in his waistband. It's a war, man. Are we winning? No. And, man, you know, that's kind mm-hmm. of, it. Like you said, it does reflect on the end.
Well, especially when he says he could be out there right now, the little kid. He doesn't know if the kid's better off. He just did what he could to make him better off. And the other strand of this is the whole way through, you're watching the mother. And the mother is somebody who you're just like, oh, I'm sorry for the little girl that she's got the mother. Thank goodness she has the aunt and uncle living in the same house because they're the only responsible people. I mean, she has an easy set of tears that she puts on. And she, you know, on the surface, which is how she lives, you know, she, oh, my little girl's gone and this and that. But what you find out later is one, they took the little girl, she and her boyfriend took the little girl along to do a drug deal. And the aunt's going, you took her with you? And she says, hey, I don't got daycare like some people. I just am a mother trying to do the best I can, you know, my child. Yeah. And you're just like, whoa, I can't even believe you're flipping and putting that all together. And everybody's just looking at her with this kind of revulsion or not looking with her. I mean, they show Angie a lot, mm-hmm. kind of looking away, going, yeah, she's revolted by this mother. And when they've got her in the car and they're going to go out to where the boyfriend is, and this money is that was taken, that they stole, the mother and the boyfriend stole, she's in the back seat and she's not acting concerned at all. She's kind of being flirtatious with Patrick and very, oh, in high school you were this and this and blah, 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 blah. She's not obsessed the way any of us would be with, oh my gosh, I hope if we get there, we'll find the little girl and, you know, my daughter. It isn't until she sees the reality of her boyfriend tortured to death that she suddenly goes, oh, no, what could really be happening to her?
Yeah, that was a moment of change for her, because after that, I believe that she was really worried.
That was that moment of change, and that was sincere, but she's so shallow. What you don't know is if she'll really change later, and that becomes the whole question for the second half of the movie. Well, once you feel like maybe she's alive again, because the other interesting thing story-wise is about, I don't know if it's halfway or two-thirds of the way through, they're like, oh, she fell into the quarry and she died. There's no more case. The little girl's gone. And just like, but the movie's still going on.
Yeah, yeah. So you're like, there's got to be more.
And then it gets picked up with, well, and you don't know if there's more. You don't know what's going on. At that point, you're just like, wow, this is weird.
Yeah, and they're on to a different case. You can still think, well, she's dead. They're going to find out who did it.
Right.
Right.
But he's like, well, and there were no more clues. So, you know, she was one of the thousands of kids or hundreds of kids who disappear and no one ever gets any closure. And so you're kind of left with that stark moment also. And then the drug dealer friend comes and says, hey, you asked me to look for these people. I found them. And this is when they thought maybe they had abducted her. And he goes ahead, but a little boy is missing at the same time, which is who this one guy, he likes little boys, they'd said. So they go to see.
Yeah.
And find a clue. So he goes back with the police at that point. And that's when you're starting to go, you know, the other thing is, people are bad in this movie, but even the bad people well, some of the bad people that you don't see very much are, you know, you just don't see very much. But a lot of the people are more gray than black and white again. The drug dealer wearing the cross for whatever reason comes to get him. He doesn't have to do that to get him in the house to see if he can find any clues.
Right.
The cheese, the Jamaican drug lord. He's not a good guy. But when he shows up and sees what's being trying to be blamed on him, he's like, oh, no. You know, you don't know what he would have done. Maybe he would have gone and told on him. That's why he's got to die.
Right.
There's the potential for good behavior in all these people. And I think that's kind of, it's very slim in some of them, I realize. But that's where you kind of go back to free will and responsibility for choices and what choices do we make.
Yeah, it's almost operating in the environment that they're in. There's still a moral code, wherever that comes from or whatever it is. There is this moral code that they're following. Both drug lords, right?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Right. But that was interesting, you know, when he came and got him and said, hey, you want to go? I found him. Let's go do this. And, you know, he went in and that was something. And then the Jamaican guy, I mean, he reacted pretty strongly when they accused him of taking that girl.
Right.
So that's why I was really surprised when, you know, and then you realize later that it didn't really all happen that way, but when the drug lord called and said, okay, I'm going to trade her, I was like, what? I mean, he reacted awful strongly. I really believed him. Yeah.
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 And we were right to.
Yeah, we were right to. Right.
Yeah because one of the things that the author said of the book, he said he thinks choices make us who we are. And there's a quote from the book, Gone Baby Gone, that says it's our choices that make us different from the animals. Mm. That's not in the movie. But Ben Affleck said when he was being interviewed about this movie, he said, well, the right thing is really the difficult thing to do because it has consequences that are unpleasant oftentimes. Otherwise, everyone would do it. And I went, I never thought of that. That is true.
That's
what the right thing is.
That is true.
Yeah. Otherwise, everyone would do it.
And that, you know, Casey Affleck's character at the end, that was something, you know.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Okay, yeah. So the choice that he makes, well, he finds out that the child has been taken by the guy who was heading this whole police unit. He was one of the police officers.
Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, Morgan Freeman. And how could you not want your kid to be raised by Morgan Freeman?
Right? I think that was the best casting choice ever. You believe him all the way through the movie. You believe his outrage. And then at the end, you're just like, oh, he would be a great grandfather, her father to her.
Right. But you can't just go taking kids. it's just so difficult. So he finds this out, and Morgan Freeman tries to talk him into not revealing it. And then he's like, I've got to do it. You know, they're going to be here in 10 minutes, the state police. So then he walks back to his car where his wife/girlfriend is, right?
Right.
And she's like, oh, you can't do this, you know? That surprised me, too.
Me, too.
I was really disappointed. And for her to leave him and everything on this decision, man, you know, so he gave up everything to do what he thought was right. And I was really disappointed in her.
Well, but the thing is as it's presented, we've seen the mother.
We have, yeah.
We know she's not going to be a great mother. Probably. We hope she'll change because she was sincerely afraid for her little girl. But, you know, one of the things that you realize about why she's not a good mother when they're leaving those scene where she's had her breakdown and they're going to take her back home and she's seen her tortured boyfriend. So she's been upset about her daughter. And she says, I'm hungry. And he goes, oh, we can get something for you on the way home. She goes, no, no, that was the last thing she said when I put her to bed. You don't think she's still hungry, do you? You think they fed her, right? And you're like, you didn't feed her. She was hungry. A four-year-old child was hungry.
Yeah.
And you didn't feed her. And then, you know, we get other poignant stories about how poorly she's been taken care of because this girl's off, you know, chasing drugs and men and everything else. And so you are really feeling the weight of what Morgan Freeman says when he's like, you know, if you leave her with this mother in, you know, what, 10, 15 years, she's going to be have a couple of her own damaged kids she's going to be dragging around with her. I have a chance to make her life good. And what Angie's saying is she'll have a normal childhood. She'll have birthday parties. She'll have sleepovers. Mm-hmm. She'll have all the things we had or, you know, any regular kid you want for them. And that has a real weight.
It does. It does have a real weight. It does have a real weight.
And
but she left a really good man.
Yeah, well, and I was really surprised when when Casey Affleck, Patrick, comes mm-hmm. back to Morgan Freeman. And again, this is how I had bought into what Morgan Freeman says, because we know he's right about a lot of this. But he says, well, that may be. But what I'm thinking about is in 20 years, when I'm facing a grown woman who says, why didn't you bring me home? I was stolen from my mother. These people weren't my parents. I was kidnapped and you let them keep me and you knew about it. And I thought, I never thought about it from that point of view. What if it's not the greatest childhood ever? And even if it is, you know, it's that they were black. The parents were, well, at least he was. I don't know about the wife. You couldn't really tell. She was that, what do they call it? On Blackish, they'll call it ethnically ambiguous. but they were good people. But you could tell this little blonde girl wouldn't be their natural child or grandchild probably. And I just thought, wow, I hadn't even thought about that. And he had thought about it. He was thinking about what's really the right thing to do without the emotion. And how do you deal with the consequences? He deals with them. We see at the end of the movie.
Yeah, and that's the most incredible thing is for him to go there and follow up and then sit there and babysit her while this lady goes out and does her thing.
It's yeah, because like you see the mother hasn't changed at all.
Yeah, it's like he's taking responsibility,
mm-hmm.
which is amazing. Yeah. He's a very good man.
Yeah, because he's really trying to live the right way. And kind of what I thought about this time through is thinking about choices. You know, everyone pretty much in this movie is going by the view that the ends justify the means. And that's so contradictory to the Christian way of thinking. The Christian way of thinking is actions count. And watching this, what it made me think was our actions form us. So all those actions those people took over the years to, you know, frame the father so the little boy could do whatever, it formed them. And look what it formed them into. People who have their own moral code, their own moral universe. We agree with what they want overall. But sometimes the hard way is not the pretty way. And they always took the easy way.
Right. And you can look at Remy, too.
That's who I was thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, so Remy, he did this for what he thought was the right reason. You know, this thing that he described to Patrick earlier. But then it leads to more and more and more until he's doing what he did here, which, I don't know, kidnapping a little girl away from her mother, that is a big, big deal. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not that the other stuff he was doing wasn't, but it's like, you know, justification becomes much easier. And I feel like that's what he went through in his life. He just was doing things, and who knows what he did that we don't know about.
Oh, yeah.
And then there at the end, you know, what he did out of desperation, trying to... you know, he goes into that bar wearing a mask
right. With
a shotgun. That's what it led him to, right?
Yeah, he was going to kill the uncle.
Right. That was the end of that road, and he was willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, so clearly the path that he was on was not a good path.
Yeah.
And again, it was his decisions that put him there. But he kept justifying them to himself,
mm-hmm.
justifying the results, you know?
Well, and when I was having the discussion with the people who were like, you know, this was the wrong thing to do. And they, I mean, one person to this day calls it that terrible movie because of how that poor little girl got given back to her mother. And I keep going, but the mother had to have the chance to change for the better. We don't know. I mean, you know, she seemed sincerely upset. She was sincerely upset and worried mm-hmm. about her child. Maybe that's the thing that would have changed her. You don't think so, but you don't know.
Yeah, you don't know.
And nobody buys that. They're like, oh, we knew she wouldn't change. And I'm like, but we don't know. He yeah. didn't know.
I think, you know, we've seen this. Most people have seen that situation. Or that girl growing up with that mom, we've seen that yeah. in real life.
Yeah.
And we know how that story ends.
Yeah.
And it's rarely good. And we all feel so helpless often when confronted with that because we don't know what to do. You know, I've mm-hmm. seen, you know, probably two or three cases in my life where you know, there was a custody battle and the kid was given to who I know was the wrong person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's because, you know, usually it's like grandparents versus mother. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And you're just like, you know, so then the mother's given the weight because, you know, she's the mother as they should be. But man, you know, how do you make a wise decision?
Well, that's the problem. It's, and that's why that opening narrative is so important because kind of what this movie does is it makes the point. It starts off saying basically our families and our environment make us who we are to start with, but it's our choices that make us who we will be.
Mm-hmm.
And he is willing, that's the thing that's so amazing to me. The strength of the movie is in that very last bit where he's showing up to check on her. And, you know, oh, sure, I'll stay with her because the mother's, you know, same old careless. And it's strengthened by the fact that this time through, I noticed that she's receiving the daughter back. The press is on her. What advice do you have? Oh, don't never let your children out of your arms. They're in your heart, but never let them out of your arms. And don't let anyone else watch them. Nobody who you don't know. Well, she's getting ready to go off and go on a date with some guy who saw her on America's Victims or whatever on TV. And, you know,
yeah.
She says and who's going to watch her. She hasn't even
set up a babysitter, right?
Yeah, Dottie. She'll find out in 5 minutes. She's going to watch her. You know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And she'll let him stay with her. She doesn't. I mean, she knows and trusts him now. But I'm just like, you're just going to let him stay with her? And she's just sitting there watching TV, which is the other thing. You know, she's playing with her doll, but she's mostly just soaking up the cartoons.
Yep. Yep.
So
not a lot of stimulation there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It's just so tough. It's just brutal. But again, you just can't stop thinking about it.
Mm-mm.
You know, and it also makes you think, you know, well, you know, when you're, you know, how do you help people make the right decisions? It's like, you know, and how do you know that your decisions are right?
That's the thing,
you
right?
know, it's like, you know, there's things you got to trust, but, you know, when you're confronted with a mom like that, and if you know her personally, you know, that's one thing. If you meet her at the grocery store or something like that, you know, there's not a lot that could happen there, but if you know him personally, it's like you're torn. It's like, what do you do? You know, how do you try to help?
Well, and I guess it's that I was thinking about, you know, this pattern has been there throughout humanity, unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
for the good parents and the bad parents. And in small communities, I guess the community can help look out for the child if the community is at least somebody in the community is right-minded.
Yeah. And that's what ends up happening so often. You've got grandparents, aunts and uncles like the where we're in here.
Right.
You know, family, people friends, stepping in to try to do everything that they can. And they sacrifice quite a bit.
And that's what we see happening here. In her small town, he becomes the one who's going to keep an eye out for that kid because he's responsible for her being there. How much can he do? We don't know. But he's making it clear that he'll just be around.
Mm-hmm.
Now and then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is now and then
he can
enough?
He can be counted on, right? You know, picture, you know, 2 years down the road, her calling him for an emergency.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And maybe, you know, that is definitely a positive thing.
Well, yeah. And you don't even know if it's that thing where the mother says, well, I'm going to go on a vacation. And he's like, okay, well, she can stay with me. I mean, it's those kind of things that arise because you're around enough. And you do have to put yourself out. And it isn't fun. But, you know, those are the choices also that we make. Are we going to just live for ourselves? Because living for other people is not always fun, but you do it.
Yep.
Or you try to, you hope you do it, you know.
You do the best you can, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Easily overwhelmed, but.
Yeah, and you know when you're avoiding it. So you try to push yourself past the avoidance of, you know, even if it's just something like, I should really make a meal to help this mother who has a small baby and, you know, whatever.
Sure.
That's a pain for me. But you know what? That's part of that being that small town and being around for that person. And it's those little choices.
Right, right.
That change their lives and change your life too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Try to be a positive influence in your sphere, right? The mm-hmm. people you come in contact with.
Right.
Right. Yeah. But I sure did. I did like Patrick.
He was
and,
great.
You know, it, yeah, and for him to be, you know, again, I said this before, but that total aloneness, yet he didn't waver. He knew what the right thing to do was in his point of view. And though people would talk to him about it, even, you know, to Angie leaving, I still, you know, that really bothered me too.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I said that already, but her leaving, that really bugged me.
How so?
Just because it's like, why would she do that? To her, you know, she couldn't see that his point of view was even valid, that his point of view could possibly be the correct one. She doesn't have to agree with him.
Yeah.
But to disagree to the point where I can't even be with you anymore, for being good, you know? For having a moral point of view on this.
But I don't think she saw it as a, I mean.
Yeah,
I
but think that's what bothers
she
me.
She his moral point of view. Yeah. Yeah. It's, well, yeah, because she's the one who said he had no right to live.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of, you're kind of like, yeah. And then later you're kind of rethinking it going, ah, crap.
Yeah.
You know what? He had a point.
Right.
It murders murder. It is what it is.
Yeah. And I wonder if in the book this occurred because there are other books, right?
Right.
So yeah, you have to assume that maybe they got back together if they did break up. But I could see her later on in life going, you know, well, what did I do? I just, you know, this was a genuinely good guy that I disagree with on this one thing.
Well, I think something about it being a child, and she, mm-hmm. I think she just felt more like Remy.
Yeah.
You're on my side or you're not on my side. And I feel like this time watching it, because I thought the same thing. I was like, how can you not kind of just let that go by? And I think it told her something fundamental about how different they were, and she couldn't get past it.
I guess so, but you know? I mean, imagine, you know, and I have no idea if her goal in life was, you know, to have a family.
Right.
But if it was, is there a better man that she would come across that she could trust to do the right thing by their kids for his whole life?
Oh, I'm on your side. I get this.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, you know.
But I think she felt like
I'm just trying to justify why I was bothered that she left. You know.
Yeah, but how could she trust him if they couldn't agree on this, I think is how she felt about it.
Yeah. I just don't think that's a valid way to feel.
Well, all right.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's not like untrue in the movie. It just bothered me.
Yeah.
But it, you know, there's still, it's not like the movie felt untrue because of it. It felt true. So it is a remarkable movie. It's very notable. And I still will be thinking about it for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll still be pissed at Angie. And I hope she comes back. Come back,
yeah,
Angie.
Yeah, that's the thing. You kind of, when he shows up at his apartment and she's cleaning out those last few things, and you're just like, oh, change your mind.
Yeah, it's like, really? You know? Yeah, I was in anguish.
But I think that's part of the tough reality of this movie. People don't always see things the way they should or we'd like them to.
Mm-hmm.
People don't always, you know, give the other person enough credit. You know, it reflects reality. And the reality in this movie is everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, that's why the cursing and the violence, I think. Because, well, it's also a Hollywood movie, but that also makes it really real. We see this is what this little girl's being raised in, right next to it. Her mother's going to that bar, bringing the kid in most of the time.
Right.
Well, not at night. At night, it's no place for a child. I'm like, I don't think it's a place for a child during the day, looking at who I'm seeing.
Right.
You know, so this is what this kid's going to be raised in, and this is the reality. And that's kind of why they show all that stuff, because any of that could erupt around her at any time. Her mom's taking her on drug deals.
Yeah, yeah.
And justifying herself. So,
yeah, her future life is wide open.
Yeah.
And that is another positive about this movie, you know, thinking about what their future is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very strong urge to think about all of that. It might turn out okay. It might not turn out okay. I think that leads to it staying with you. And
yeah.
It really is a good movie because of that. You feel like you know these people and you care about them. At least I did.
Yeah.
And
you certainly cared about Angie and Patrick.
I still care about Angie. I care very deeply about Angie. Angie, just come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she did. I think she will. Okay, yeah, that's taken care
that's
of.
That's good. Patrick needs her.
Well, but these are the things where you have to be as wise as Solomon, and we aren't that wise. You just have to do the best you can, and that's the being innocent as doves and wise as serpents. Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really, you're always balancing on that edge. And in some ways, Patrick is very innocent, you know, because he's trying to keep himself on that real, true path. He has to accept that these rules are the right rules, and he's living by them.
Right, right.
But he also has to be as wise as a serpent. How do you apply that in your life? How do you keep other people from derailing you? So we see him balancing on that fence top, so to speak.
Right.
And that's on a very much lesser scale is what we do all the time.
True. He does that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Innocent and tough at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's nobody's fool.
Right.
But he's wrestling with questions nobody else even thinks about because they've accepted the popular way of thinking about it. If you mess with a kid like that, you deserve to die. And we don't disagree because we love children or don't like children. But how does everybody stay true to who they are? How do you give everybody that free will chance? And I think about this and I think, does God experience anguish? Because surely over many of the choices we take, there must be this, maybe I can understand it better through Jesus's human nature. This is him standing, looking at Jerusalem saying, oh, Jerusalem, I would gather you under my wings like a hen with chicks, but you insist on going your own way.
Hmm.
It's that anguish over, I have to let you do what you free will, because you might choose the right thing and it's the only way it means anything, but you're breaking my heart.
Yeah, well put. So I am, I looked up here, Dennis Lehane, the first Kinsey and Gennaro book is called A Drink Before the War.
Okay.
It's got very good ratings on Goodreads, so.
Okay.
On my list.
I'd be curious to see how you like it.
All right. Yeah. Definitely on the list.
Did we say everything?
I think so. And thank you for picking this movie. It's, again, another one. And I'm going to watch it again.
I think you have to watch it twice.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's one for the pool room.
I was thinking I might have to get it from my own pool room.
Yeah, because, yeah, it just, yeah, it's just one of those things you're just going to talk about. So it's a fun movie to watch with people.
Yeah, and also a good movie for something like Lent.
Yeah.
Where you're thinking through how to live, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, which is coming up.
Yeah. That's right. That it is.
I guess, yeah, we're recording this ahead of time, but when it comes out in the feed, it'll be Mardi Gras, and
that's
tomorrow
will
be Ash Wednesday. So this is one, if you don't mind violence and language, watch it.
Yeah, for sure.
If you do, stay far away.
That's right. That's right. Well, good. All right. Well, thank you again.
Oh, well, I'm so glad you liked it.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So next up, we're going to shift gears, right? Tough Voyaging by George R. R. Martin. And I've started to read those.
Oh.
Fun so far?
Yeah. It's a series of short stories. And I guess you'd call them a fix-up novel because some of them were written later to kind of provide a bridge in between all the short stories. But it's basically trickster tales.
Trickster tales. Okay.
Well, you know, Tough is has to think his way out of all these situations.
Nice. Yeah, George R. R. Martin of Song of Ice and Fire fame.
Yeah. Game of Thrones.
Boy, yeah, his career has gone crazy since then. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and I seem to be able, I don't want to read his long, long books, but I like his short stories very much. So,
yeah.
And I really loved this collection.
Good. Yeah. All right. Well, I look forward to talking to you about it.
Yeah. In a couple weeks.
In a couple of weeks. Right. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Yeah,
thanks, everyone.
All right.
To you later.
Angie, come back.
She's just outside the door getting ready to knock. It's okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
See you later, everybody. Bye-bye. Thank you.